Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. The first day of spring, a little later in the hour, we're going to be talking with Russell Johnson, who teaches trumpet at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, talking about Jazz Week at Parkside. Our conversation on the Morning Show begins, however, with the topic of sustainable living and green innovations that can help all of us live our lives with a lighter carbon footprint upon the earth. And it's going to be a conversation that will touch on what we can do as individuals and also what larger organizations and institutions, places like colleges and companies, decisions that they can make to do their business or carry on their work in more sustainable, green-friendly fashion. Happy to have Carol Sabar back on the Morning Show. Carol, remind me of your title at Hedberg Library at Carthage.
Right. Changes often, but Director of Library and Instructional Technology Services.
Very good. And with her is Mia Bennett, who is Carol's green technology assistant in Hedberg. And you may remember that not long ago, Carol and Mia were here to talk about a film series at Carthage called This is America. And before we're done today, we'll make mention of the final film in the series that will be screened at Carthage in early May. But mostly we're going to be talking about matters related to living green and working green in more sustainable fashion. Carol Sabar and Mia Bennett, we welcome both of you back to the Morning Show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Glad you can be here. We should mention that Mia Bennett is about to complete her master's degree at Carthage with a degree in business design and innovation. Carol Sabar, tell us a little bit about how you first got the idea to create the position of green technology assistant and why you thought that was important to do.
Right. So I would say that some folks at Carthage have been thinking about sustainability for quite a while. Actually, I want to do a shout out to Bill Hoare at Carthage. And there was an issue of the Carthaginian that came out that had the flame and green leaves on the front. It was really kind of cool. Mia was also featured for separate reasons in that Carthaginian, but that talked about sustainability at Carthage and really focused on Bill Hoare's legacy in terms of a lot of the things that he's done with sustainability. But it became kind of obvious after a little while that there were things that we could do, but obviously we needed some help, just help getting things organized and maybe making contact or whatever. So in about the spring of 2013, I decided, well, let's hire a student assistant that could work on some of these things. And so we initiated the Green Technology Assistant. And so shout out to a local woman, Amanda Felt-Smith, who graduated a number of years ago now, was my first Green Technology Assistant. Kira Immordino was the second one, probably the most energetic and vibrant of all of the ladies. They've all been ladies so far. She was from Trevor originally. Shay King is now the marketing manager up at I never remember the name of the place, in Racine. And so, graduated a few years ago. Rachel Treadway probably worked for me for 3 years, and she's now on her way to Korea to teach English. So that's kind of cool. Nicole Blomquist. And then Ellie Haviland is actually still working with Mia right now. One of the reasons why I hired Mia was Ellie, who was one of my green technology assistants, went and studied abroad in Italy in the fall. And so I knew that I wasn't going to have anybody else to do that. So, but the rationale for it really was if we really wanted to do some things with recycling, for example, or disposing of our e-waste, electronic waste properly, or trying to figure out how we could consume less paper is always a big one, or consume less electricity, make sure that lights and projectors and things get turned off, that we needed somebody to help us think about that and then help us actually do some of the, you know, sometimes we get to do really exciting things like package up toner cartridges to ship back to wherever. So. Yeah. Yeah. But, things that I didn't really want to spend my time doing.
Right.
So.
Right. So by and large, the focus of the Green Technology Assistant has been in the sector of technology. Cool. It's not that you're using technology so much to investigate how can we do something completely different in a green way. It's really about using technology in an earth-sensitive fashion.
Correct. It's about, you know, making sure that technology isn't your enemy when it comes to sustainability. I mean, we all know that we have so many gizmos. I think there was a statistic at one point that, you know, annually we manufacture more than one cell phone for every person on the planet. I mean, I'm not sure that that's the exact stat, but you get the idea that, you know, there's this expectation that everybody needs the newest phone or everybody needs this or, you know, and we are turning over technology on a somewhat reliable basis. You have to, right? I mean, you can't live with a computer that's 7 years old on your desk. It doesn't work. So what do you do to be more sustainable and to, you know, source it better, dispose of it better, all of those kinds of things? And so, yeah, we're talking about that. The reason that we really focused on it was in Library and Information Services, which is the unit at Carthage that has the library and technology. There are things that we can all do unilaterally. We can make decisions about, you know, if I'm ordering products for my office kitchen, I can decide whether I'm buying paper plates or styrofoam plates or bagasse plates, which are made out of a sugar cane byproduct waste kind of thing, highly compostable and highly sustainable and really good for the environment. So I can make those decisions. Then there are things that we try to do that convince other people to do the right thing and to get, and that's much, much, much more difficult. As we've seen, the decisions we can make on our own are relatively simple, put things in place that help other people be more sustainable.
So there is an educational piece to this as well that is important, albeit difficult to
I think
carry
if
out.
If you want to have a larger impact, you have to be able to educate the other people that are out there.
Right. And not just preach to the choir, not just.
Exactly. And sometimes even the choir doesn't always know all of the things that they can do. So it really is useful to connect with other people that have that same kind of mindset. So the Chris Grugels in the world that talk about things like going off the grid and how, I mean, when you're talking to a person who, Chris and I both have bought over time tankless water heaters. And so, for example, not only do they help with water consumption and use less gas and so forth, they also save on my gas bill $50 a month by not heating water that you're not using, right? So somebody like, you know, Chris was like, oh, and when I first turn on the hot water, I, you know, fill the dog bowl and do all these different things with the water that's coming out of the faucet while you're waiting for it to get hot. So if that sounds foreign to you as a concept of worrying about the water that's coming out of the faucet, then that's not the mindset you have. But if you talk with other people that have that mindset, and all of a sudden you start getting ideas and you start sort of cross-pollinating all the different things that you can do.
That's important, and it makes incredible, innovative ideas seem a little less strange and makes you realize they're absolutely doable and in many cases preferable to the common way that we do things. Mia Bennett, I know that one of the things that is very important to you is speaking to your own generation. And I think when we look at your generation, it's probably a complicated picture in terms of some people who fiercely care about these issues and live accordingly, and other young people, just like people my age and Carol's age, that do or don't. It's a mixed picture with your own generation. What are your most sort of burning concerns about people your age?
Well, the fact of the matter is my generation loves to share, retweet and repost on Facebook and Instagram. And you often hear about the issue of millennials not wanting to actually take action, to put an effort into changing their lifestyle, into recycling more, and to just changing their everyday behaviors in a way that helps the earth. Because to be honest, a lot of people aren't coming from backgrounds, and we talked about this yesterday, where that's a habit, where they need to be considering, you know, their consumption and how much their electric bill might be in a month. And I think the real difference between the generation before us, who did a lot more of the walking, you know, and the walking and the talking than just the talking, is that we trust the institutions way more than your generation did at our age, you know, the man. We see those institutions as kind of like a position of power and influence, and we want to infiltrate that and make changes at that level. But there's a disconnect from having these, like, sometimes lofty goals and taking action on the ground level. And so that's what we've been kind of trying to figure out. How can we get the students at Carthage to not only have these lofty goals and wanting to make changes in the higher ups, but also changing their everyday life? Because it does seem a little hypocritical to say that you care about sustainability and the earth, but then you're taking 45-minute showers every day. And I think the fact of the matter is that the issue is at our point of consumption, how much that we're consuming. And so we have to kind of get a call to action or a sense of urgency for the students on campus, to make them understand that their rate of consumption is not, you know, on the right path for our society and for our planet.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that's the kind of news that nobody welcomes hearing, and yet it's that famous inconvenient truth that Al mm-hmm. Gore talked Absolutely. About in his groundbreaking documentary, and something that all of us have to come to grips with in one way or another. So let's talk through some of the green initiatives that have been sort of put together at Carthage. Within the auspices of what you do, Carol, and with your green technology assistants like Mia Bennett, what would be several examples that you think have been especially interesting and effective?
So early on, we made a few policy changes, if you will, or practice changes. One was that we set up so that the computers on campus and the various computer labs automatically shut down at midnight, 1 a.m., whatever, just in case nobody remembered to shut them down before they left. And then we used to have, a student go around and turn on all the computers in the morning. We don't do that anymore. We figure that, when somebody sits down, it might not be till noon that someone mm-hmm. sits down and turns on that computer. So why have had it running for, 4 hours sitting there? So we don't do that anymore. We also set all of our printing on our public printers to be double-sided by default. So you have to work a little harder if you mm-hmm. want to, and we tried to indicate to faculty, for example, don't. This is, it's an uphill battle, but don't collect stuff on paper. Collect it electronically. That's one. If you are going to collect it on paper, at least let the students print it out double-sided. Don't make them print it single-sided, because that's, twice as much paper. My favorite one that we did was, we were kind of struggling with, what do we do with all these leftover toner cartridges? And so we found an institution, a company out of Milwaukee, Environmental Innovations. I think they've recently changed their name to Oasis. Mm-hmm. But and they remanufacture cartridges at their place in Milwaukee. So it's, like quadruple sustainable. It's good for a local business. The carbon footprint is lower because you're not shipping cartridges from California or China or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They're coming from a local place. They will deliver them, and they will also pick up all the empties, including the boxes that they were in and things like that, so that there's really very little. Like Mia said, we kind of contacted them about how, where could we get rid of things, and they'll pretty much recycle anything that isn't otherwise recyclable. Amanda, my first green tech assistant, also identified an organization called Cartridges for Kids. It's from Waste Management, and they will take back, now it's a little bit more about electronic devices, mm-hmm. older cell phones and tablets and laptops, if you don't know how to get rid of those. Also toner cartridges and ink cartridges. And then they give you a little pittance for them back. But the idea would be that maybe a local school would collect these so that, and use it for a fundraiser for their school. So school teachers, if you're out there, you might want to mm-hmm. look at Cartridges for Kids and see if you could do some fundraising for your school. And it would also give the kids a chance to participate in sustainability, because it is important to feel like you're doing something, and a place for parents to say, I've got this computer, I don't know what to do with it, how to get rid of it. Electronics are really hard to get rid of if you don't have a place you can take them. So,
And you had mentioned that this was really important to you, that Carthage as an institution dispose of obsolete electronics as properly as possible, although as you just alluded to, sometimes the options for how to do that are pretty limited.
Right. Yeah. E-waste is a big thing. That said, when we were talking about, you know, having your students turn in things electronically, I had, you know, one of the faculty point out, well, what about e-waste? And I said, yeah, but the kid's not buying a laptop just so they can turn in your paper. They have the laptop already anyway. So please leverage that. But getting rid of e-waste is problematic. And so, periodically, there are lots of vendors that would love to come in to various industries or schools or whatever and take care of your e-waste, because they have ways to recycle it and make money out of it. But you want to make sure that the company really does deconstruct those and not ship them overseas or something. And so they end up, you know, on a beach in India, leaching toxins into the ground or whatever, which is part of the concern with electronics.
Right. And so that's also the kind of thing that, for instance, a green technology assistant is helping you with, is investigating those kind of matters?
Correct. Actually, Mia did some work. We're really kind of excited about this for the institution with the folks from Focus on Energy, which, shout out to the people listening today, Google Focus on Energy consumer free products or whatever. If you need LED light bulbs and you haven't asked for any in the last 3 years, Focus has a thing. You just go online, fill out your thing, and they'll send you a box of stuff. But they also have a program for institutions where they'll have like engineers come in, and we're going to be doing some replacements in our server center over the summer. And so kind of excited to, you know, get the engineer to come in and say, so people would be familiar with the programs that a place like Focus has for your refrigerators, right? Before your refrigerator breaks, when it's an old, really energy hungry refrigerator, they want you to get rid of that refrigerator and buy a newer Energy Star, more efficient refrigerator that won't consume as much electricity. And so they may give you a $50 rebate for your old refrigerator, right, to turn it in. So they have bigger programs like that at institutional levels, where if you change out your air conditioner unit for your entire, you know, company or your entire building, then they will help with incentives to investigate what the better replacement products are, but then also incentivize you to do that trade out before your air conditioning dies.
Right.
Yeah.
Is part of your role, Carol, an advocate for these issues, for instance, to other people at Carthage? I mean, for instance, to whoever it is that buys refrigerators for the cafeteria or other parts of the campus that aren't obviously under the direct auspices of the library, but making decisions every day that impact on exactly the issues you're talking about. Is that part of your role, or do you see your role in that way?
I think that's evolved a little bit, but I think that in the last couple of years, and Mia can talk about this, we've been doing better at connecting with other areas of the college, as we know that people will listen. Again, back to Bill Hoare, he and I have been talking about this for a long time, but as people change and different folks come in, so we've been connecting more with other folks, trying to connect them with resources.
Right. Mia, what would have been the most important points of focus for the work that you've done as Carol's Green Technology Assistant?
So far, I've just been working to find avenues of collaboration, like Carol said, with other organizations on campus, because I think change happens kind of a level above. The higher you go, the more influence you have, especially when it comes to changing students' behaviors. So I think that I mentioned there's a natural connection between sustainability and social justice. So I've been trying to reach out to the avenues at Carthage relating to diversity, equity, and inclusion, because there isn't a natural natural connection between those two efforts. But either way, those people definitely have a sense of urgency about something, and kind of combining the goals of trying to be a little bit more environmentalist and having a concern for the people, that can only put society down the right path, right? So I think that right now, students have an issue with confusing their basic needs. There's water, food, and shelter, but there's also technology and money and convenience. And if you have access to something, our students are going to consume it. You know what I mean? So we have to create that sense of urgency, like I mentioned, which includes maybe making things more expensive or reducing students' access to these resources, which is why Carol mentioned, you know, shutting down computers more often, maybe reducing that access. Or we can just show that these students are being held accountable for those decisions. And Ellie and I both, we vote for the third option because we're both current students at Carthage and we don't want things to get more expensive. So we do have a solution for that in the works. I'm not going to speak too much on it because we're still trying to work on getting it going together, but Carthage is definitely continuing down that path of growth.
Yeah. Carol, I wanted to ask you about the kind of the sobering reality that sometimes when green alternatives are used, it sometimes means more money. That is, sometimes the choice you make to buy these paper towels that are made from recycled paper, I think especially several years ago, it's probably maybe less mm-hmm. true now, but often that was an alternative that cost you more money than just your regular old Bounty or whatever. And are we sometimes talking about needing to make decisions that might financially be a little bit painful but have this other aspect to them that make them the more compelling choice?
I do think that's true. For example, you know, you may be tempted as you walk through the grocery store and you need, you know, paper plates or whatever to say, oh, well, the styrofoam ones are on sale this week or whatever. Those are actually cheaper today. Just pass by the styrofoam. Don't stop and buy the styrofoam. Right. And if you do buy the, like, the compostable bagasse ones that I mentioned earlier, yeah, they are more expensive. And sometimes, you know, green cleaning products might be more expensive than, you know, just your average caustic, whatever it is. That said, there are a lot of times, I really want to emphasize, there are a lot of times where being green is actually cheaper. Hmm. And one of the things that we say a lot is, you know, the mantra is reduce, reuse, recycle. And those words are in that order for a reason. Reduce is the brass ring of everything. So the less you use, there's no way you can convince me that using less is ever going to cost you more.
Right.
Okay? It just won't. So on the reduce end, you will always save money by just, you know, rather than worrying about, you know, compostable cups or whatever, just use the, you know, a mug for your coffee or whatever,
right,
and
right.
Don't use any kind of disposables as much as you can. So the reduce and then the reuse, again, is better than recycle. So if you've got, you know, whatever it is that you're using and you can wash it out and keep it a little bit longer or whatever, that would be better. On the, you know, on the cleaning end, for example, I got to thinking about it. I'm like, you know, as much as you might say, well, I should buy these products that are labeled green, I don't think it's even just younger people. I think mm-hmm. it's people in our generation too, Greg, that we're not really good at knowing what things do, maybe as well as our parents were. Mm-hmm. So we might look for, I always say, you know, we look for the Excedrin migraine when mm-hmm. for our migraines, when the regular Excedrin has exactly the same the same ingredients, it just because it says migraine, that must be what it's for. So if we don't know that we can clean out the bathtub with baking soda or vinegar
yeah.
then we're going to buy something that says bathtub cleaner on it. And then we might pay more for green bathtub cleaner when we could just use the vinegar and the baking soda in the first place. And A, it'd be way cheaper. And B, it's like, you know, entirely biodegradable. There's nothing about vinegar or baking soda that are bad for the environment. I mean,
right.
you can eat both of them. So, or, you know, brush your teeth with them or whatever. So, so there are a lot of things that really, my feeling is that if you show me a frugal person, I will show you a person who has less negative impact on the environment. I mean, think about it. If you think, oh, yeah, I need to have this new cell phone, the cell phone is manufactured using raw materials that get consumed from the earth. They're manufactured probably in a place far away using probably caustic manufacturing practices that aren't really good for the environment, have industrial waste and all that kind of thing. Then they're shipped, you know, far, far away in a whole crap ton of packaging. And then, you know, then we have to get rid of the old cell phone and get rid of the packaging. And then we have to buy the, you know, the, I don't know, the leopard skin case or whatever that it goes on. And we just keep consuming and consuming. I mean, you know, if you could make that cell phone last for 4 years instead of just two, now you've cut your consumption in half and cut your waste in half and cut the manufacturing in half. I mean, if you're working for a cell phone company, this doesn't sound great because it's also, you know, it's part of the economy to produce.
Right.
But I think we can find some other things for the economy to do.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're talking about, in a sense, swimming against what is kind of the business model that has become acceptable, although I think there is a lot more discussion about whether or not, in fact, this really is acceptable in the, in the best sense of the word. Are there a couple other things you want to share with us in terms of things that people can think about in their own individual lives?
Well, first of all, they should come out and they should look for our Facebook page, which is Carthage Green, so that they could like our Facebook page and see some of the things that that we put out there. As I mentioned earlier, the couple of things, because they impact Carthage's budget directly, are power consumption, for example. So students at Carthage, when you leave your room to you know, take a shower or do something else, turn off your lights or turn off your electronics. Don't leave your computers running all the time or whatever. So just think about the things that you consume. Sort of back, you know, I kind of credit the fact that I have parents that were born during the Great Depression and also lived through World War II rationing. So the idea that you would, you know, paste on your dashboard of your car, is this trip really necessary, right? Those things. And I have to say, too, I think it might have been Rachel and I were talking about it, but me and I were talking about it again yesterday. She had said she had friends that, not Mia, but Rachel had said she had friends that actually threw away clothing. And I think I had to look at her and say, you mean like in the trash?
Right. In the garbage?
Because I was so confused, because I was like, there's only 1,000 things you could do with your used clothing. I mean, donate them to, you know, Goodwill. Purple Heart will come and pick them up at your house. You know, I mean, there's
make
a million places
out
you
of
could,
them or
yeah,
quilts
make rags
or,
out of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't you clean things at home? You know, cut down your paper towel consumption by using your used T-shirts or whatever. Or, you know, when I was a kid, my mom and I used to sew quilts for church, you know, and so you'd take all your old whatever. I still have a quilt that I made at home that's got, you know, a million of my grandma's old dresses in it. And it's just fun to look at, you know, this was grandma's dress and this was my old blouse and this was whatever. So, I mean, so we had kind of said yesterday, you know, people that are inclined to throw away clothes have a lot of education in front of them to really get to the point where they have less of a carbon footprint.
I was just hearing this about this yesterday. Someone had read an article about how a huge yet largely unacknowledged source of what goes into landfills is discarded clothing. And it's just astounding.
It freaks me out. Yeah. I just don't know what else to say.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, as we're talking, it makes me realize that there's actually, although there's really an urgent need for us to be thinking about this, but there's something kind of fun and something actually very exciting about thinking innovatively beyond kind of the common way of doing things. And it also reminds me of a conversation I had many years ago with somebody at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, that when they built their home where they are located in the 60s, it was built with environmental concerns at the forefront. And whoever this person was, I don't remember even what our conversation was about, but I think it was for the construction of the Rita. And but they were talking about how one of the challenges when you build something with environmental concerns in mind is that then the process of making it even more environmentally sound is actually more challenging versus if you carelessly build a drafty old house. Well, then there's all these very obvious things you do to make it even more energy efficient. And actually, for a place like Parkside, and maybe to some extent Carthage too, and Gateway, when you build carefully in the first place, then it really takes creativity and innovation and kind of a relentless drive to gain improvement upon something that's pretty good to start with. I'd never stopped to think about it, but it just kind of made me think about how energizing it is to work on these issues wherever you happen to be on kind of the arc of sustainability.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of the 80-20 rule, right? 20% of the effort will give you 80% of the results, and to get the remaining 20% of the results, you need to put in 80% more effort. And so I think you're right. If you put in 20% of the thought to your daily life, you can probably get 80% more sustainable than you are right now. that last 20% takes a lot of work. And I think really what me and I and Ellie and all the other green technology assistants that I've had have really been, you know, is really, really trying to identify the low-hanging fruit. What is some of the low-hanging fruit? What is, you know, we've got the whole infrastructure in place for students to turn in their papers and their homework electronically. There's not really any reason why we should be handing paper to anybody anywhere on campus. So that already exists. Let's just leverage that. That's easy. And people know how to do it. So that's that. And the students like it better anyway, turning things in. They don't have to stand in line at the printers. They don't have to worry if the printer's not working. They don't have, you know, all those kinds of things. You know, the recycling containers are there. Just learn. One of the things we talk about is you need to understand what your local waste place recycles and what they don't and how they recycle. So at Carthage, we have single stream recycling. So yes, you can throw paper and plastic bottles and aluminum cans in the same receptacle. If you live in Kenosha, you probably know the blue bags are for anything that's not paper and the brown bags are, you know, paper and cardboard and things like that. One of the things that Bill Hoare would tell you is that one of the biggest changes you can make is to try to keep cardboard out of the waste stream. So cardboard recycles really nicely. Find a way to recycle cardboard. You know, use reusing tote bags when you go grocery shopping rather than using the plastic bags. I mean, Mia mentioned earlier that, you know, a lot of us haven't lived in a place. I had a person before, an administrator who will remain nameless, that had said, well, you know, we're in the Midwest. We don't really do sustainability. And I was like, oh, no, don't say that. That's terrible. But obviously, if you've ever spent any time in a place like San Francisco, you kind of go, oh, my God, there's, you know, I mean, the hotel room had, you know, recycling containers. And now I think every hotel room everywhere should have recycling containers. Actually, if I could get anybody to advocate for something, I'm not much of an activist in general. I'm more of a do what I can do kind of person. But I would love to see, like, the city say that every single gas station needs to have recycling bins. Everybody gets out of their car to put gas in their car, and they start cleaning out their car. And there's no recycling containers at most of the gas stations in Kenosha. So you're like, I mean, I'll pack my plastic bottle back in the car so I can find a place to throw it away sustainably. And Quick Trip, for example, is a Wisconsin-owned company. So I'd like to see Quick Trip just decide that, you know, across the entire, wherever they are, they'll put recycling containers. But again, those are things I can't make happen. So the best that I can do is pack my plastic bottle back in the car and take it home where I can throw it away in a good way.
But talking about it is a start.
It is.
And somebody who is a little more of an activist at heart, hearing
if you're
that.
A teacher out there, my theory is that if we had enough school children write letters to the Kenosha City Council or something, we could get them to, you know, have a city ordinance that said that all kinds of places, if you have a publicly available waste container, you need to have a publicly available recycling container and take care of that. So, you know, get your third graders to write letters or something.
There you go. Yep. Well, you've given us a lot to think about in the last few minutes, and I really appreciate that. That's why I was anxious to have both of you here. Before we let you go, Mia Bennett, I want you to say a quick word about the final film in this film series called This Is America, which is going to be coming up actually in early May.
Yeah, so I just wanted to tell a quick story that I heard, and it really resonated with me. I heard somewhere the idea that before the colonization and industrialization of the United States, a squirrel could be in a tree on the California coast and jump from tree to tree all the way to the Mississippi and not land on the ground. And I think that's quite an idea. And the fact that it had been like that for the entire, you know, however many millennia that the Native Americans were living in our, you know, in this place. And that's just something to give credit to. And the way that Native American culture, I mean, historically in our country has been discussed has been a little disappointing. So anytime that we have the opportunity to bring that to the forefront and get an authentic appreciation for, you know, their experiences, we want to take advantage of that. So on May 9th, the Library and Information Services Department is going to be hosting a film screening of a film called Neither Wolf Nor Dog. And that film is actually still running in theaters, so it's not available for purchase on DVD. So if you come to to the film series on May 9th, that's really your only opportunity to see it because the films are actually being shown on the West Coast, kind of out of our reach. But it tells a story of a white author who travels to Lakota country, and he gets a firsthand understanding of contemporary Native American culture through the eyes of a Lakota elder. And so we're really excited to be hosting that film series.
So Neither Wolf Nor Dog.
Neither Wolf Nor Dog.
May 9th, yes. Being screened at Carthage College to finish out the film series called This Is America. Mia Bennett is the Green Technology Assistant, the current Green Technology Assistant in Hedberg Library, working for Carol Sabar. And I am so glad that both of you could be with us for this portion of the morning show to talk about this really important and interesting topic. Thank you so much. Remind Carol, our listeners again of the Facebook page they should seek out.
Right, so if you go out on Facebook and you just look for Carthage Green.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also Instagram, Carthage Green as well on Instagram too.
Very good. Carthage Green, we'll remember that. Thank you so much to both of you for being part of the morning show.
Thank you, Greg.
And part two of the program is coming up in just a moment. And to finish out today's morning show for this Wednesday, the first day of spring, I'm so happy to welcome back into our studios Russell Johnson, who is a very, very talented trumpeter and teaches at UW Parkside full time,
yes.
And also teaches trumpet at Carthage
now. Trumpet at Carthage.
And where else were you saying?
And for this year, I'm teaching at UW Madison as well, teaching the jazz trumpet studio at UW Madison. So I'm at three schools. It's a heavy load.
Great,
but that's the Madison appointment is just for this year. They kind of got stuck, and I agreed to help them out for this year.
So. Well, you're a very helpful, nice person, and very, very talented as well. And you have been. Busy overseeing what is looks like a really, really exciting music event at Parkside, namely Jazz Week.
Correct. I believe this is the seventh or eighth year we've been able to do this. I work hard to curate what I think is a program of amazing music. And it's educational in nature, but it's also open to the public, so I hope to see you all there. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity for my students to hear internationally acclaimed artists, and also sometimes I think almost even more importantly to interact with them. When we have our concerts on Monday through Wednesday, so it's a full week program. We go Monday through Saturday this year. This is the first year we've gone through Saturday, and I can talk more about that later. But on the Monday through Wednesday concerts, my students, the artists are asked to present an hour-long performance, and then we do a 45-minute Q&A afterwards. And it's fascinating, honestly. Mm. To hear any artist talk about their craft is, I believe, enlightening and important for my students, our students. They get an opportunity to actually, you know, really dig in deeply inside the artistic process with some amazing musicians. So I think it's incredibly valuable, and I think my students oftentimes get as much, if not more, out of the Q&A afterwards as they do from the performances.
As you're describing that, it's making me realize that when I think back to the jazz musicians that I've had a chance to either interview or see in performance or hear in Q&As, it makes me realize that, I mean, jazz is one of those things we so often think of as kind of completely spontaneous. It's like what happens like off the top of your head, kind of, and unbridled by a lot of rules and this and that. And then thus, it might almost seem like something that you don't have to particularly talk about. Like, you just do it, and it's about tapping into your kind of inner musical freedom or whatever. And that's actually just so wrong.
There's this endless
number of things to explore and talk about and discuss. And some of the most interesting musicians I've ever talked to have been jazz musicians talking about jazz.
It's, you know, every profession, every art has their, you know, intellectuals succeed. And pretty much every, no matter what field you're in order to achieve a certain level of notoriety and success, and I don't even say notoriety. Notoriety is not important in the artistic process. But most of the musicians that I know that are jazz musicians are really deep thinkers. Mm. And they're usually very well read. Mm. And they are literate on many topics, from politics to all of the arts. And, you know, I understand where this this thought may come from. I agree with your assessment that it is a false premise. I would put it this way: most of the musicians I know have spent more hours working on their craft and thinking about their craft and working on developing their musicianship. I would put that up against the hours any doctor or lawyer ever studies to work to become great at their craft. It's the beautiful thing is it's a lifelong pursuit. That learning never stops. The growing never stops. And again, that's one of the fascinating things about the Q&A afterwards is I think, you know, and the general public asks as many questions as my students at these events, and I think they gain an insight. Last night, we had a group led by a cornet player from Chicago named Josh Berman, and at one point the discussion got quite heated. Hmm. And I not only am okay with that, I love that.
Hmm.
You know, the question was basically brought up, I'm going to paraphrase it, but you know, is art meant to entertain you, or is it to be the artist to show their truth, as Darius Jones so eloquently put it last night? So it's really fascinating, and yeah, there is a ton of thought that goes into this in the compositional process, and some people, as a listener, you may not appreciate everything, you may not like it, but I guarantee you that the musicians have put in constant thought into the process. It's just something that we do actually naturally. It's something that you kind of can't stop.
Right.
Because hopefully we're continually being informed by current events, by current literature, by current art, everything else. So,
musically speaking, does Jazz Week cover a wide swath of what we think of as jazz?
Yes,
it appears
for sure.
To, from what I've seen.
Yeah, I make every effort to do that. The first night, Monday night, we had a group from New York led by the great drummer Adam Nussbaum, and he was presenting his Lead Belly project. Mm. Lead Belly was one of the first acclaimed blues musicians.
Yeah.
So the music was actually deeply, deeply, deeply rooted in the music from the 20s and 30s and 40s. Mm. Now, it was maybe a modern take on that, but I think it was very accessible, very listenable. Last night, Josh's group presents what, you know, his version of what art, his art is, and that might have been more challenging to listeners. And again, I think that's important for my students. I think that's important for the general populace. I make a very concerted effort to try and program a wide variety of things. Tonight we have a band coming in from New York. I'm actually going to pick up a van and go to the airport after this interview to pick up the incredible pianist Chris Davis. She's one of the most highly regarded musicians on the planet today. She's won every major award. She has been, you know, won every critics poll, huge features in the New York Times. She's a friend and an incredible musician. Her music, again, might be a little more on the challenging side. Then tomorrow night we have a group led by saxophonist Greg Ward from Chicago. And it's a collaboration with a choreographer named Onye Ozuzu. And it's I actually play in that project. I typically do not play during Jazz Week. I don't want the focus to be on me at all. I want it to be on artists that are coming in. And that's it's a take on modern music, but it's a collaboration with an incredible choreographer.
The photographs look amazing.
And the beautiful thing about it is the dancers in this project, a lot of it is improvised as well as you know. I mean, I had the opportunity to work with the Merce Cunningham Dance Company when I was living in New York, and oftentimes, you know, Merce was partners with John Cage, and that music was. They were supposed to almost be two different entities happening at the same time, and there wasn't necessarily choreography expected to match the downbeat with the musical performance. In this particular project, there is an element of improvisation, even though there is basically like set pairings in the choreography, and it's fascinating. I premiered that with Greg 2015 at the Pritzker Pavilion at the Made in Chicago series in Millennium Park. And Friday we have the UW Parkside Jazz Ensemble along with Bradford, Tremper, Wilmot, and Indian Trail High Schools.
That's Friday night.
Friday night.
And at noon is the faculty still happening?
Thank you. Thanks for reminding me. At noon is the UW Parkside faculty jazz concert, and I'll be performing on that. We have a great saxophonist who comes up from Chicago to teach at Parkside, named Chris Madsen. And then, it's all Parkside faculty. Tim Ibsen on bass, David Bayless on drums, and James Sodke on piano. And then on Saturday night, we have a group led by an amazing guitarist from Chicago named Henry Johnson. And that's more of a straight-ahead jazz event. And that is sponsored by Dave Braun in the Southeast Wisconsin Hearing Center in Racine. He is very gracious with his time and his financial resources, and he actually funds that concert. And as long as I'm mentioning sponsors, I'd like to mention Kenosha Community Foundation as well. Mm. They've really stepped up and help to bring Chris and her trio here tonight. So we rely on a lot of that because, as most people know, funding for the arts is not high priority.
Right. Are these performances all in Francis Bedford Concert Hall?
They are. They're all in Bedford Hall. All
How
at
does
7
that
PM?
Work for jazz?
It's, you know what, whoever, and I don't know the name of the acoustician who designed the hall, but they, you know, when they did the design of Bedford, of the Rita in general, but Bedford specifically, whoever they hired as the acoustician did a really fantastic job. Mm. It's, you know, there's no hall that's going to be perfect to have an orchestra, a choir, a wind ensemble, a jazz ensemble, a rock band. Just doesn't exist because of the natural reverb in rooms. So what they did is there are some baffling that we can do, and we have these curtains that are in place. So it sounds great for pretty much everything. We're very, very, very fortunate to have that.
It's an amazing space.
It is an amazing space, yeah. We're
Absolutely.
Very fortunate.
Right. When these musicians come in, is there this tiny little piece of you that misses the life that you once had? That is, as a full-time, incredibly busy professional trumpeter out in New York City. I mean, I know that you love what you do as a teacher. You're a wonderful teacher, but does this sort of take you back to those days?
Yes, of course it does, and it's something that I'm fortunate to still tour a lot. And I'm going to be in Europe 3 times over the next 6 months.
Whoa.
Touring. So, and I'm going to China with the UW Parkside choirs. I'm just going to be giving a lecture, I believe, there. But I do miss that. And the thing is, the way, you know, the world has gotten smaller in a way. So I still am able to connect with a lot of my friends from New York. I was there for almost 24 years. And it's a chance for me to reconnect with those people.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to call in some favors, and if they're going to be on the road, I can get them in for a budget that I can afford.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reminder, and I still, you know, I try and stay as current as possible with what's happening in the music. And honestly, this affords me a chance to connect with friends and present what I think is incredible art.
Well, nothing wrong with any of that.
Yeah, for sure.
So Jazz Week at UW Parkside is currently underway, and mm-hmm. as And as Professor Johnson mentioned, there are performances tonight, tomorrow night, Friday noon, Friday night, and Saturday night. So lots still to enjoy.
Yeah, and the performance tonight, Friday afternoon, and Saturday evening are all free. And that's one of the things that I'm very proud of. We're able to do this for non-ticketed events. Thursday night, for Greg Warden, Onye Isuzu, is a $10 ticket for the general population, $5 for students, which
is a bargain for something
it's
so special.
And it's the same thing for the Jazz Ensemble concert on Friday night.
Very good.
Yeah.
And you can go to uwp.edu for more information about Jazz Week and everything else going on at Parkside. Yes. Russell Johnson on the music faculty there. Great to reconnect with you, and thank you for putting together such a wonderful series. This is so exciting.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate your help in getting the word out, so thank you.
Happy to talk with you again. Russell Johnson, trumpet instructor at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, joining us for part two of today's morning show. Tomorrow on the morning show, among other things, Herschel Kruger from the theater department at Carthage talks about their latest production, which is about to open this weekend, a production of Marie Antoinette. We remind you that the morning show is now available at a podcast.